Welcome back for another episode of Talkin' Winter Ops. And on this one, we're going to continue the conversation about folks running into snowplows and other slow-moving maintenance vehicles and things you could consider to help prevent that from happening. On our last episode, we were talking with Jed Falgren there at the Minnesota DOT about ITS solutions they developed to help motorists detect maintenance equipment in front of them on the road. In this episode, we're going to head to West Virginia and visit with Jeff Pfeiffer, who's the director of the Equipment Division at the West Virginia Division of Highways. Jeff has lots of years of experience with equipment, winter maintenance, and the Clear Roads Pooled Fund Project, who coincidentally have been studying maintenance vehicle conspicuity for quite a while. On this episode, the conversation focuses on color, light packages, and reflective materials to make your snowplow stand out in winter conditions and hopefully avoid getting hit. Right after this. The Winter Weather Management Technical Service Program and Talkin' Winter Ops is here because of the support from AASHTO's maintenance community and state DOTs out there who make a voluntary contribution every year to financially support our TSP. Without the support from those states, we wouldn't be able to provide you with the resources to help you achieve your winter maintenance mission. A special thanks to all the states who support the Winter Weather Management TSP. So, Jeff, you're the equipment superintendent, right? Is that what you call it? Or
director of the equipment division.
And how long have you been there at West Virginia DOT?
Let's do the math. I started in 91. We're in 24, so 33 years.
Wow. You've got to be close to being able to retire.
I am eligible as we speak, but I'm holding in there. I'm not quite ready to go yet.
So, Jeff, we know each other from Clear Roads.
Yes.
And there's been a lot of work done with respect to lighting packages. And like I mentioned, the episode prior, we had Jed Falgren on, and we spent quite a bit of time talking about ITS solutions. It's like, where's the plow in front of me? And one of the angles that they've taken, in addition to lighting and tape and all of that, is some ITS kinds of solutions, real-time warnings, to let folks know that there's a slow-moving operation in front of them, and snowplows kind of fit into that. But the other half of that equation, like I say, is lights and conspicuity tape and those kinds of things. And I understand that you've been working on some of those things there in West Virginia. What are some of the things that you're looking at to draw attention to the snowplows or the slow-moving vehicles, trying to reduce the number of crashes that happen?
Well, one of the things we did, it's been about 5 years ago, we switched to, we had originally had our trucks were blue and gold. They were yellow with blue fenders, and I believe the top of the hoods were painted blue. We've switched at that time, back in the early 90s, I think it was, we went to white with blue and gold tape. We have gone back here recently to a yellow, like a school bus yellow with blue striping on it and our fluorescent DOT shield on the door. That was, a lot of that came out of the Clear Roads. I know yellow wasn't the most conspicuous color. Mm-hmm. It was the green that they use at fire departments, that kind of
fluorescent green, yellow green.
Yeah. And from the studies that had been done prior to the Clear Roads study, I think it was DuPont did a paint study, and they said that you're looking for a color that doesn't appear in nature naturally. And that's why that fluorescent green really stands out. But we went with yellow. Our state colors are blue and gold. Mm-hmm. For the DOH, and the state college, West Virginia University, the colors are blue and gold. So it's kind of the theme. But the yellow stands out brighter than the white for sure. We've had a lot of comments on it from the public and our people saying that it gets your attention.
Now, that's during the daytime, right?
Daytime and night, both, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they say that, well, I mean, once their headlights hit it, the yellow stands out better than the white does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know there's been some studies you brought up fire departments, and
yes,
some studies about the color red, and that red isn't necessarily the best color to be seen in the nighttime. But
yes,
but when that red is reflective tape, it stands out pretty good when a light
reflective tape. Yeah, it stands out. But I know like the military uses red light for like covert situations. You know, they'll switch to like red light flashlights because the eye doesn't pick up the red light as well at night versus like a bright white light.
Right. Yeah, it helps your night vision. It helps keep your night vision intact. Yep. So you've made the switch back to the school bus yellow and the state colors, so to speak.
Yes.
A question: does that add any cost to the equipment, or does it hurt you with resale value or anything like that?
As far as the purchase price, there's no real difference in the cost of the paint we're getting because it's an off-the-shelf paint.
Mm-hmm.
We have heard that on the far end, it can affect your sale price, but all these trucks that we brought into the fleet have been in the past 5 years, and at the rate we're going, they're going to have to last another 15 years, so it'll be a while before we sell anymore.
Right. Yeah. You know, we sort of had that argument here, you know, the initial cost, right? And, you know, it's not like you go to the showroom and you pick vehicles off the showroom. You put your order in and they build them. And as far as the manufacturer goes, they don't care what color the paint is. It's got to be painted. So pick one, right?
Yeah. Now, certain paint colors are more expensive. I know like red is an expensive paint color because it has more pigment to it.
Okay.
But like my body shop here, they've told me spray paint yellow is hard because yellow is really thin. It doesn't have a lot of pigment to it.
Oh, I see.
So, but the yellow paint doesn't cost us any additional money right now.
Mm-hmm. So aside from paint color, what are some other things that are being done for conspicuity to draw attention to these vehicles?
We use the DOT tape, the red and white DOT tape. We use blue 3M, like high reflectivity tape on the truck body itself. Our shield, the badge that's on the door, is a reflective, a 3M reflective tape. And when a headlight hits it, it really lights up like a headlight's flashing back at you because it's white.
Mm-hmm.
We have lighting packages on the trucks that we have Whelan lights. Whelan is under contract with us, and we have the LED lights. Now, we can only use amber. I know other states use white and amber and the high visibility green LEDs, but we're just right now we're only allowed to use the amber LEDs.
Mm-hmm. So back to tape. You mentioned the different colors that are there. What about different kinds of tape patterns? You know, in my experience, we had street sweepers were rear-ended a lot. And so we went to putting some big chevrons across the back, reflective chevrons. What are some of the things that you've heard with respect to reflective tape patterns?
We use, we started out with, it was a yellow and red, like a DOT tape, and we put it on the tailgate. If I remember correctly, it was down in between the gussets. So it made like a checkerboard pattern on the back, but it wasn't a full checkerboard pattern.
Okay.
We started out with yellow and red, and that tape was excessively expensive to buy. So we went to red and white for the same effect. I know Canada uses, and I don't know what they call it. I think we talked about this before and you had a term for it, but a red checkerboard pattern like they use at the airports. It looks just like a checkerboard.
Yeah, I think they call it a Battenberg. Is the checkerboard look, yeah.
And I know that it's in, I think it was in our Clear Roads conspicuity study, we found that that was one of the highest rated patterns for catching your attention. I know a lot of the fire departments in different areas use the V pattern or Chevron pattern on the backs of the trucks. It just was hard to make it work with our trucks, with the tailgates having the buttressing built into them to make it look right.
Yeah, it's not quite a flat surface to work off of.
Yes.
Yeah. And it probably goes back to that whole thing with respect to paint. It's like something you don't naturally see out there in nature, and so it grabs your attention right off.
Yes.
So, you know, we talk a little bit about the different the tape patterns and the colors. You mentioned the lighting packages that you use in AmberLite. What are some issues associated with light packages that you've heard out there that folks should probably be aware of?
Well, there's issues with the intensity of the lights. They can cause like a high glare. I know our packages now come with a reduction, like it'll reduce the level of the light down at nighttime so it doesn't blind drivers as they come up on the vehicles. I know our drivers initially complained about the placement of the lights, especially if they were up above the cab and it started snowing. The strobe effect would start to like mesmerize the drivers, almost like a disco ball, because like flashing off of the snowflakes or the back of the plow. So we looked at the different placement of those lights. I know when you come upon a wreck and you've got multiple entities out there, fire, police, ambulances, and all their lights are not synchronized and they're all going different patterns. And especially if it's raining, it can really, for myself, it makes it complex to pick up people moving out there because you're just, you know, it blinds you. The new packages we've got on our trucks, of course, we don't have enough of them yet installed because we're just starting to put them on, but they can actually synchronize. So as trucks pull up onto the scene, they will communicate with each other and they'll start flashing in the same pattern. So you don't
really
get that strobe effect. Yeah, I know that's Whelan has that. I don't know if any of the other ones have that or not, but it's a pretty neat effect because they come up and they're on their own timing and then they'll all synchronize and flash together.
You know, that's something that I really hadn't thought about, Jeff, but you know, when you do come up on something at night, I mean, it's just such a chaotic scene. It's like you don't even know where you're supposed to go. You know, if they've got some traffic control going, you know, and you have all of this light going in front of you, like you say, it's hard to pick up folks, even if they're wearing the whole ANSI, you know, kit with the reflective tape and everything. There's just so much confusion going.
There's so much going on. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's really, really a cool feature to have these lights synchronize themselves, together. You know, on snowplows, for example, we hang a lot of different things off of the snowplow, like wings, and we've got tow plows where plows are in lanes where people wouldn't necessarily expect a piece of equipment to be. How important is illuminating that and putting warnings up? And what have you heard people do?
I know there's been, I'm trying to think if it was Michigan, somebody had like a whip light that they put out on the end of the wing plow that stood up and focused back so people approaching it could see it from behind. I know a lot of states have used a lot of different lighting techniques on those wing plows and the tow plow packages as well. Some states require a pilot vehicle behind when they're operating those vehicles. We don't have the luxury of having enough people to do that. So
I don't know of anybody that has that kind of luxury to have somebody just follow along behind a tow plow.
Right. you know, so we're dependent on whatever's on that vehicle. And we don't have any tow plows, and we only have a handful of wing plows trucks that are on the interstates. But there have been, I believe it was covered in, we had another research project through Clear Roads that completed in 2015, if I remember correctly, and it was developing practices of how to use equipment lights on snow plows, and they looked into the wing plows as well at that, on that study.
Okay, we'll do a little research. We'll see if we go out there and we can find that study, and we'll put the link to that study in the show notes for that. You know, when you're talking about lights on wing plows, I saw a news article come through just recently from Iowa, and what they're doing is they're putting like one of those whip lights. It's almost like a glow stick, right? It's,
yes.
It's maybe
yep.
12, 18 inches high.
Yep.
And it's glowing as opposed to sending out a beam of illumination.
Yes.
And I think there's just so much research that probably needs to be done, you know, with how you recognize lights at night in bad weather, right? Because that, like you mentioned, putting a snowstorm out there and the lights strobing into the snow really creates a like you say, a mesmerizing effect and
yes.
It increases fatigue and all kinds of other things in the drivers. Jeff, we talked a little bit about the different colors of lights. And I know you get a couple of maintenance professionals together, a couple of equipment folks together, and it's like the conversation always seems to turn to that, right? What mm-hmm. color lights do you use? And it's not as easy as just calling up a manufacturer and saying, hey, we're going to put green on our vehicles. We're going to put flashing blues or amber or whatever. What are some considerations that folks have to have when they're thinking about different colors of lights?
Well, from the first part is from here in West Virginia, we have to have legislative approval as to what lights colors we're going to run. And like I was saying earlier, we're only allowed to run amber. We are trying to get the opportunity to run green, like ODOT and Michigan and a lot of other states are now starting to move towards, but it just hasn't got traction yet. Some states are allowed to run red or blue. I know Alaska, Iowa.
I think Iowa just got the okay to use blue, right?
I remember when we were out there, they had blue lights on their trucks. They can only use them, if I'm not mistaken, they can only use them for winter operations. But they do have permission to do that. And like I said, that would require legislative approval here in West Virginia.
Well, I think in a lot of states, I think it would be rare to find a state that, you know, where the light packages weren't legislatively regulated. You know, it's like first responders, police, fire, EMTs, emergency medicine. They sort of have their specific light package. And I mean, it's important, right? Because as a motorist, when you see that particular light combination, you know what it is you're coming up upon.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the issues with the amber lighting is so many other entities run that amber, like over the road trucking, construction. The meaning gets diluted. You know, when you see amber lights, it could just be a postman delivering mail. You know, it's
right.
That's where the green, I think, is important. If we would get that, like ODOT has it, where it's only allowed to be on their trucks, if that's what we could get here, then that differentiates us.
Right. And, you know, we talked a little bit about it. It's like so important. You know, you mentioned that on your commute in, there's a house with a blue porch light. And
yeah.
It's like it creates a reaction, right?
Exactly.
You know what you think it is. And you know, it, I think that's really important. Any thoughts about whether there'll be a national standard for lights on snowplows?
There was just recently, I think it was at the last Clear Roads meeting, that there was some talk that the green light may get like a federal
recognition, right?
distinction, as it would be for highway operations, which I think would be great. But that's the last I heard about it. But I think it would be. I know when we started the Clear Roads one that I was on, which was the maximizing the conspicuity of maintenance vehicles, we were kind of trying to come up with a standardized, you know, what's the best thing for a plow truck. I don't think we hit that mark. We found a lot of the best practices, and it was a synthesis conducted. It wasn't a full-blown research project.
Mm-hmm.
But we did come up with a lot of best practices to be used, but we didn't say this is the ideal situation to have a truck in. And a lot of that, you know, this things are different. Like I know in North Dakota or out in the plain states, they deal with snowfall mm-hmm. a lot, and they get their trucks tail ended because people just can't see them through the snow. Right. Here it's more, we have like a wet, heavy snow. Sometimes we'll have whiteouts, but it's not the same. You're not like driving through a blinding whiteout where you can't see, like, you know, it's right. a different animal. So there may be differences needed just because of the locale that would say that you couldn't have a one size fits all package for trucks.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and then, you know, you throw in the state legislatures too, you know, there might be, you know, different rules associated with a particular color. And, you know, somebody may have already laid claim to that color.
Yes.
You know, for the same reason, it's like when we see that color, we know that vehicle is a school right. bus or a emergency vehicle, et cetera.
Right.
Any research you know of that's going on?
I know that we are taking the suggestions for the next round of research for Clear Roads, and my submission was to revisit to maximizing the conspicuity of maintenance vehicles, and also the best practices for lighting on snowplows, because I know the one I was on, the conspicuity, it was back in 2016 it was submitted, and it didn't get finished until 2018. So it's now going on 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And the other one was finished up in 15. So it's 8 years or 9 years old now. So looking to see if anything's changed or improved and just what the industry standard is out there. Now, whether that gets selected or not, I don't know, but I hope it does, because right. I think it's something that people are interested in.
Well, and, you know, from a safety point of view, you know, I thought I saw some articles pop up in the news just this year where plows are being, you know, being hit, right? They're being involved mm-hmm. in crashes because people didn't see them. And I thought, wow, this is kind of an interesting thing. I wonder why this year is different. And so I started doing a little research, and, you know, you put in snowplow crash, and it's like every year there are, you know, it's just news article after news article after news article associated with plow crashes. So, you know, I think this isn't anything that's particularly new this year. I think it's got a little more traction in the news, but, you know, this whole idea of not being able to realize there's a plow in front of you. And you know, there's lots of different reasons for it, right? I mean, there's, you know, the plows are generally going slower than traffic wants to go. And so there's this,
exactly.
there isn't this harmonization of speed that takes place. And like you say, the snow cloud that occurs with sort of lighter, fluffier snow is an issue. And, you know, there's lots of different factors that come into play. And I think it's certainly something that's really important, because you take a plow out of commission because of a crash. Not only, you know, have you involved the public in an incident, there's a piece of equipment that you're not able to use, if there's a crash, that means you can't plow the snow. And that, I mean, there's all kinds of operational issues that occur from that. And for the sake of, we wanted to be safe. In addition, you know, making sure that folks know there's a plow out in front of them is really important.
Well, and from where I'm sitting with equipment, I know this organization, as well as other ones I talk to, everybody's trying to be leaner and meaner. So you don't have a lot of spares, right, if any, sitting around. So if a piece of equipment goes down, that's, you know, and they're very specialized. It's not like something you can go to a dealership and buy. It's got to be upfitted and built to your spec. And then when you do tear it up, they've got to usually custom make parts to fix the thing. And then it's set. And yeah, so you're on, you know, you're down. And then, like you're saying, if you have an accident, it shuts it down and it's snowing. By the time you get things cleared out, you've got a backlog of snow and cars in the road. Trying to plow them out is a pain. And it slows everything down.
Yep. Yep. So, Jeff, from your point of view, what do we need to do? You know, if I were a new maintenance engineer, a new fleet manager, what kinds of things should I be looking at?
As far as lighting or plowing in general?
Yeah, just kind of in general.
Well, one of the issues we have is, and it's not just us, it's all DOTs, is employee turnover. We've got a lot of green people in here, and not by green, I don't mean Martians. I mean people that are new. And getting them seat time is, you know, tough in and of itself, getting them up to speed, but getting them seasoning seat time operating a plow under harsh weather conditions is really tough. So one of the things we're working on as we speak, and hopefully we'll have in place before fall of this coming year, is trainers, almost like computer game trainers for both plow trucks, and it gives you the ability to do plow trucks or just truck driving and heavy equipment operation. That way we can give people some training before we send them out into the storm. You know, it's one thing to drive a truck on a sunny day with a load of gravel on it, and then it's a whole different thing on bad roads in a snowstorm with a plow, a spreader, right, and, you know, a ton of, you know, 12 tons of material on.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying that avenue to see if these simulator trainers will work to help the drivers get some extra experience before we put them out there.
Right. So from a training and defensive driving point of view, you know, that's an important piece. And in fact, we had Doug McBroom on not all that long ago on an episode talking about the defensive driving program that Clear Roads had put together. And then so the operator, there's operator considerations, right? And then there's also considerations associated with the equipment and conspicuity, tape, lighting, and those kinds of things. You know, have you noticed with the LED lights, because LED lights, you know, are energy efficient, right? They don't tend to heat up quite as much. Have you run into issues with that particular aspect of LED light packages?
Yeah, you have to, especially on LED headlights, you have to have a heating element built into the lens to give it enough heat to melt the snow and ice off. Otherwise, it cakes on there and then you don't have any light. Whereas the old incandescent or halogen bulbs generated enough heat, they could melt that material off as fast as it hit.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the strobing lights and things, have you noticed that there's issues associated with those, the LED packages? And
if I'm not mistaken, we have heated elements in those as well now. But yeah, it was the same thing when we first got them. They would tend to pack with snow, and then you're up there trying to brush it out.
Yeah, another task that the operator is responsible for, right?
Yes, exactly. And it's a climbing exercise, which is never good, you know, putting somebody up on slick surfaces and trying to work elevated. So if you can eliminate that, you hopefully eliminate the chance of an injury.
Yeah, you're kind of asking for an injury, right?
Yes.
Let's see, anything else you can think of with respect to conspicuity and vehicles, things that folks are trying, things you've seen, things that sound interesting?
Most of the focus right now seems to be on the lighting and the tape. You know, that's the one thing everybody's working on. And I know a lot of states are going back to white fleet vehicles. I know we mentioned that earlier, that the mindset is that the white vehicle has a higher resale value than a colored vehicle because it's easier to sell. But, you know, when you take color out, then that just leaves you with the lighting and the tape to work with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I guess sort of the operative thing here, you know, as we're talking about this, is there really isn't one standard package out there. Everybody's just sort of trying to come up with what works best for them. You know, maybe from a research point of view, trying to assimilate all of those different ideas and, you know, to say, you know, what are common features that probably are working across the board that we want to do more of. One of the things I've always said is every solution has a problem, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And when we start talking about how a vehicle should be painted and striped and all that, you know, like aircraft liveries, right? So the livery of the aircraft, you know, what is its scheme? And, you know, there's so much local influence in a particular livery, right? It's just like you mentioned in West Virginia, you've got your state colors and the colors of your state university, and those are important colors to you, right?
Right.
And I'm sure as you go across from state to state, there's those kinds of influences that come in across the board. So it's not an easy thing to say, well, we just make everybody's snowplow look the same. Kind of like school buses all look the same, right? And
yes,
to a big extent, you know, fire apparatus looks the same. I think that's going to be a very difficult thing for a DOT or a Department of Highways or a transportation cabinet to get their arms around, right?
Yes. I think that, you know, trying to get everybody the same standard is going to be tough, but getting these best practices into play is where we need to focus, because anybody can do that. You know, this light is really working, then everybody should look at getting that on their truck, or,
right,
you know, this striping pattern works great, look at putting it on your trucks. So yeah, I mean, you want to do everything you can to protect your employees and the public.
Right. Absolutely. Well, Jeff, hey, I want to thank you for sitting down and visiting with us a little bit. I mean, oh, it's a really hard topic, this whole idea of snowplow conspicuity, but it's an important one. And
yes,
thanks for sharing your insight and your expertise as a manager of a big equipment fleet there in West Virginia.
So thanks for having me on, and you're welcome.
And so, Jeff, if it's okay with you, I'll put your email address in the show notes. And mm-hmm. if folks have questions, you know, about what you've seen and you know, your experiences, both there in West Virginia and through Clear Roads and other organizations you've been involved with, an invitation to have them reach out to you directly.
Absolutely. Yep.
All right, Jeff. Well, again, thanks for joining me here and sharing your expertise.
Thank you.
If you like this episode, share it with your colleagues. And while you're at it, click subscribe on your favorite podcast app. You can sign up to get all the Talkin' Winter Ops news direct to your inbox by clicking subscribe on our podcast website, talkinwinterops.com. Sign up today so you can get all the news firsthand. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at TalkinWO. Now, this podcast is possible because there are state departments of transportation across the nation that make a voluntary contribution to support the AASHTO Winter Weather Management Technical Service Program, formerly known as SICOP. It's because of their support that Talkin' Winter Ops and all the other resources we provide are there to help you achieve your winter maintenance mission. Now, the contents of Talkin' Winter Ops are intended for general information purposes as a public service. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the individuals alone. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by AASHTO, the Winter Weather Management Technical Service Program, or the West Virginia Division of Highways. Until next time, thanks for tuning in and stay safe out there.